Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, October 17th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our newly redesigned website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is marvelous Thursday, we'll call it, here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And we've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D., coming on, as she always does, the first and third Thursdays of every month. And today, great topic, social behavior in birds. She'll be joining us here shortly and get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out to be able to take lots of notes, because that's what we're all about, learning more about our backyard poultry. So thank you very much for tuning in. Send a shout out to all the homeschoolers that listen to the show. Thank you very much for doing so and incorporating this show into your curriculum. All the over-the-road truck drivers we listen to, keep the rubber on the road, get that freight there safely so you can get back to your family safely. Are everybody listening live and everybody listens to the archive? There are thousands of you. Thank you so much for tuning in and enjoying the show. And last but not least, all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live for their customers, thank you very much for doing so. Hope business is doing well for you. So we've had a great week this week on the radio show. Monday we had Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, come on. That was an awesome show. We had open mic and answered a lot of questions from our fans and listeners. Tuesday we talked all about essential oils, how they can get us through this icky, germy flu and winter season. Yesterday we had Garden Wise Living with Arlena, where we talked about growing garlic, planting winter squash, and planting trees in the fall for fall color. So we've had a great, great time this week, and we're so glad that you can join us today for this episode where we're talking about social behavior and chickens with Dr. McRae. So gotta love it. There's a lot of chickens in the news that came across the wire this morning, and I'm starting to slowly post it on Facebook. I don't want to, maybe about once an hour, once every hour and a half, I'll post something. Don't want to flood everybody with this information. Some of the articles you will like and some you may not like or may not interest you. But I do want to share one with you during the show today here, first during our Chickens in the News segment. Let me try to open it up here. I thought it was very, very interesting. And I specifically wanted to share it with you. So let me pull it up here and try to find it. At least I thought it was very interesting, and I think you will too. So let me get back up here, and it's not that one. I know I saved it. It came out this morning. Here we go, getting down here to it. It's just a very interesting article, and I will post it on our Facebook page either during or after the radio broadcast today. Just a reminder, all the radio broadcasts are archived for your listening pleasure. So if you missed any of the shows this week you want to listen to, you can find them for free on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and right here on BlogTalkRadio.com. If you hear a little pitter-patter in the background, it is raining here in the Northeast Georgia Mountains where we are currently on the road, really kind of like full-time RVers, if you will. And so when the doc gets here, I will probably mute myself, so I don't know if you can hear it in the background or not. So come on now, let's get the internet going here. I want to read this Chickens in the News story. Now it's coming around. It comes to us from Germany, and Germany tests a dual-purpose super chicken, and that's the title. It comes to us from the Daily Meal, all things food and drink. Germany tests dual-purpose super chicken. A German company is testing a dual-purpose chicken, but customers have been resistant. Let's see. Every year, millions of day-old chicks are killed and discarded as a useless byproduct of industrial chicken production. Many of our listeners know this because the egg layers are the most predominant, or the ones that are most wanted, even with the backyard chicken keepers. And so these big hatcheries have to do something with the male chicks, you know, and it's, sometimes it's not so pleasant if you research it or think about it. But every year, millions of day-old chicks are killed and discarded as a useless byproduct of industrial egg production. Male chicks will not produce eggs, and chickens from egg-laying breeds don't have much meat, which makes male chicks from egg-laying breeds basically useless to modern agriculture. But according to Spiegel, Lohmann, I can't pronounce this German name, Lohmann Tierzucht, a German company that is the world's largest producer of egg-laying hens, has been working on a new breed of super chicken that would make the culling of male chicks unnecessary. The new Lohmann Dual chicken, that's what it's called, the Lohmann Dual. The Lohmann Dual chicken is a rare dual-purpose breed. The females lay respectable numbers of eggs for egg-laying hens, and the males are meaty enough to make decent broilers. The new chicken was developed in response to growing criticism of modern egg production practices. Spiegel reports that the useless male chicks are disposed of by being tossed alive, by being tossed alive into a grinder called a, and of course I always mess up this word, macerator, are there suffocated by carbon dioxide and used as animal feed at zoos, reptile farms. German animal welfare laws prohibit killing animals without reasonable cause, and recently the culling of male chicks has come under fire. One German agriculture minister has promised to ban the practice within the next year. This practice is absolutely horrifying, says Johannes Rimmel, agriculture minister of North Rhine Westphalia. We cannot allow animals to become the object of an overheated and industrialized system. If the culling of male chicks and the production of conventional and organic eggs is banned in Germany, it would likely be good news for the new super chicken. The Lohmann-Dule is meant to put an end to the massacre of male chicks, but is not a perfect substitute. The hens lay slightly fewer and smaller eggs than hens from breeds designed solely for laying eggs. And the males need more food than conventional broiler chickens, which makes the meat and eggs more expensive than from standard egg and meat chickens. Also, the Lohmann-Dule does not have the enormous breast meat that most consumers prefer. It has a very large, meaty thighs, but thigh meat is not very popular. The dual-purpose super chicken has been on the market for 2 months, and only three farms have purchased the hens so far. So, again, I guess they had good intentions. They looked at the concerns, not just over there, but over here. It's a big concern as well with the humane treatments. Let's face it, the male chicks, I mean, think about it. When you go to McMurray Hatchery, Ideal Poultry, Mount Healthy Hatchery, and you're looking for a few backyard hens, most folks order pullets. They want those egg layers in the backyard, and they can't have roosters in the city. So they just order the pullets. But you and I both know when these big hatcheries, hey, Ideal Poultry, for example, shipping out over 6 million chicks every year. What does that mean? They have another 6 million male chicks that just aren't needed and are discarded? You know, that's a crude reality of backyard chickens and chickens in general. But this company over in Germany is saying, hey, let's try to put a stop to that. Let's create develop a bird, research and scientifically create this bird through breeding. Where, yes, as you heard, they lay pretty good egg output, but yet the males can be pretty good for meat consumption as too, to maybe stop some of this maybe not-so-pleasant practice for a lot of people. So I'll be posting this article. You can read it in its entirety on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. But I saw that. It was very interesting. I knew it would resonate with a lot of our listeners because I know on occasion there will be stories linked on my page about the horrid way that the male chicks are put down. Now, and you know, good, bad, or ugly, okay, the way using the grinder, if you will, creates instant death, and it is approved, right or wrong, I'm just the messenger here, it is approved by several different veterinary agencies nationwide as an acceptable form. Yeah, no, I'm not the one going through the meat grinder, right? But as an acceptable form of instant death for the male chicks. It's happening, whether we want to turn a blind eye to it or not. And it is that is a approved way, humanely or not, by several different agencies that oversee that. So, but maybe this is a turn for the better. Hadn't been too popular yet because you and I both know a lot of people, it's about the almighty dollar. And feeding the world. And so if feeding the world means, I mean, think about this. You know, when we've had the commercial industry on the radio show here, and we've had the backyard farmer, the organic farmer, the free-range farmer, the small-scale farmer, and we've asked them the tough questions, you know, we'll ask the small organic pro farmer, you know, who's raising a couple of thousand hens, can we feed the world doing it your way? I mean, think about it. How many billions of chickens we go through a year on the planet, let alone in America. And if we do it your way, would people be willing to pay $8 for a six-piece chicken nugget at Wendy's or McDonald's? That's the key. Would they be willing to pay $12.99 a pound instead of $4.99 a pound for those chicken breasts in the store? And so, you know, feeding the world cost-effectively, that's where we're at with these big factory farms, if you want to call them that. And when we've asked the questions about the to everybody, is basically, can we feed the world doing it your way, maybe more humanely than normal, but can we feed the world? And would you, the people who want this done that way, would you be willing to pay $8.99 for a chicken nugget meal instead of 99 cents? So I thought it was an interesting story, and I thought that it would be pertinent to a lot of our fans and listeners. Research in motion. It is an amazing thing out there, and I try to post both the feel-good stories, like I did this morning with the Boys and Girls Club, you know, having eggs, hatching eggs, and taking care of chickens and gardening and things like that. A feel-good, good morning story. But I'll post this one a little bit later, a little bit more scientific, and I've got a few more to post as well. It was a good chickens in the news day, so I try to be kind of broad with what I post, because I know there's a lot of fans and they all have different interests. So, but nonetheless, it's time to get over to our switchboard. It looks like Dr. McRae has called in and is in queue, so let's go ahead and give her a big chicken whisper a welcome, like I know we can. All right. Oh, there we go. Hey, Dr. McRae, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Andy. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you loud and clear, yes. Thanks for coming on. And you, being a poultry scientist, you know science is an amazing thing. And here they are over there in Germany trying to create the perfect bird, if you will.
Kudos to them for thinking outside the box.
Yeah, no kidding. Very, very interesting.
I like the fact that you're not afraid to tackle the tough issues, Andy.
No, definitely not, whether it's grinding baby male chicks or whatever it is, you know, people are going to hate me or they're going to love me or they're going to find something.
I like your example. It's not me going through the grinder. Andy, you wouldn't fit. You're too big.
You're exactly right. I don't think
love
I
you,
but
it. It's not meant for you.
So, hey,
whisper all you want. You're not going to fit.
Today. No, I'm not going to fit. Popular topic today. I know it'll be listened to thousands of times. Social behavior in birds, I guess, i.e. chickens. And, you know, it could be anything. And I'm hoping we'll get out of this today. Maybe I'm going down the wrong path of, you know, I'm guessing that relates to this thing called pecking order and why Miss Lily over here is getting pecked on all the time and why she's being picked on and why she's low, you know, that type of thing, and which is always a big concern with folks. I just had someone post yesterday on the Facebook page that she's losing chickens. They're become cannibalistic, and my question to their basically start with pecking and it progresses and whatnot. So, but yeah, social behavior in birds, and I guess the big one there is pecking order when we think about our backyard flocks. And I'm sure it goes in more depth with that. We've got our chicken whisper notebooks ready, and we're ready to learn all about our backyard chickens from you, my friend.
Well, I'm not having the easiest time logging in to the chat room. So if you find any questions pop up, can you shout them out to me?
I definitely will do that. Based on our last story, Bard Rock already chimed in. Free-range pastured broilers go for about $35 each where he's at in Massachusetts.
Sounds about right.
Yep. You know, you're hard-pressed to go into the local Walmart and get a rotisserie chicken for $5.99. It's probably not going to be free-range pastured broiler.
That's not your market, no. And I like that you brought up the fact that, you know, if you want to do something different, make sure you do your market research. Make sure the market can bear the additional cost, because if it's not, there ends your business. There ends your venture.
It probably won't be too popular. Yep.
Okay, so, like I said, if any questions pop up, let me know. So
I definitely will.
Every listener in your in your listening purview, Andy, has been their own behavior researchers. Everyone knows how your particular birds behave. Everyone sat out there, watched their birds, gotten a good chuckle out of this or that and the other thing and the way your particular flock members behave. But I still find myself quite often explaining certain behaviors to small flock owners to quite an interested audience. One of the first things that people think about when it comes to behavior is imprinting. And imprinting was discovered by Conrad Lorenz, and he did that work with geese. That was rather famous in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and he did his work over in Europe. But he's basically the father of animal behavior research. He got a Nobel Prize for his work on imprinting.
Wow.
So what he started was the study of behavior, or ethology. Of course, when you add an ology at the end of anything, that means the study of, and it's the study of the biological basis of behavior, ethology. And as we go through today, I'm sure some of your listeners will think of excellent school science project activities. I mean, it's that time of year when the teachers say you need to start thinking about your school science fair project. And it might be something as simple as, you know, watching the behavior of your birds, recording the number of times a certain behavior occurs, and then change the situation in one way or another and do the same amount of counting and see if their behaviors change. So in the study of ethology, you're looking at how does the behavior develop in the animals? Is it something that they were born with? Is it something that they learned? If it was something they were born with, it's an innate behavior. If it's something that they learn, then that's something that they gradually master over time. Like, say, perching. Perching is a learned behavior. Innate behaviors for, say, humans, since you have two subadults in your family unit, Andy, what are some of the behaviors that you've seen your children come with right out of the womb?
Well, if this counts, that I don't have to teach them to cry when they are hungry.
Very good. You've heard of something called the Babinski reflex?
I have.
And that is something that is an innate behavior. When children are really little and you run like a tongue depressor up their foot from the heel to the toe, they curl their toes down. As they get older, like us adults, they flex their toes away from the tongue depressor. Or maybe it's switched. I can't remember exactly. But in, like, say, to determine if someone has a head injury, sometimes they'll just do a quick test of the Babinski reflex, and if they get no motion whatsoever, then they're like, uh-oh, this person has had a brain injury after an accident or something like that. Another thing that they look at in ethology is what is the function of the behavior? How did the behavior evolve, and what exactly shaped it? And what is the cause of the behavior? So those four questions are things that ethologists or people who study animal behavior or even sometimes animal welfare, they have to keep these four questions in their mind, and that's what some of the research is in the field of animal behavior.
Well, how about being related to chickens? What a good example would be, because we often talk about it, we've had shows on it, egg-eating behavior.
That's learned.
learned, and then how they can maybe teach that to the other hens, and which they will. And could that be learned by accident? Like, oops, I just dropped an egg after collecting it. This particular chicken gobbled it up, every little morsel. And then now they're like, They lay that egg and they see it there and they're like, ah, yes, I remember. This was very tasty. I'm going to eat it. Or could it be learned by accident? They step on it. It breaks.
Right.
They eat it.
Right.
They learn it that way, I guess. But that, I guess that's a learned behavior.
Those are all learned behaviors. Yes.
But I guess also something that everybody can relate to, you hatch out baby chicks. You just get your mail order chicks in. You're placing them in the brooder. And, oh, my gosh, nobody taught them. They're scratching around in the bedding.
Mm-hmm. And
so
imprinting, if imprinting is an innate behavior, identifying one particular person or chicken or chick as mama, as the one that they're going to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And so imprinting is an innate behavior. And, you know, when we started looking at chicken behaviors, instead of looking at backyard flocks or commercial industry, some researchers went back to where we domesticated chickens in Southeast Asia with the red jungle fowl. And they would actually look at how they had social organizations inside those large flocks. And sometimes those flocks were as small as four, but they went up to 20 birds in some cases, with most of them being hens and chicks. In a normal harem, it's 1 to 3 roosters, with one rooster being dominant, and then several hens and chicks. So if you're a rooster, you've got quite a few hens probably under your purview, and you want to defend your territory. Since we domesticated chickens, a lot of the behaviors haven't changed. Although, in some breeds, we have tried to breed out broodiness. As a lot of people know, the single comb white leghorn isn't selected for broodiness. It is selected for egg laying. And even before we started to intensively select the bird for egg production, you know, where it came from in Livorno, Italy, it already was pretty much a non-broody hen. They didn't have a tendency to go broody.
I was going to ask if you thought that was on purpose, or that just is a side effect of now trying to develop the perfect bird. We just talked about that, or it just kind of happened.
No,
okay.
They were known for not being broody for just ages before Lyman Bice brought them over to Petaluma, and they, you know, the commercial layer industry started with Christopher Nissen in Petaluma and Sonoma County, California.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a home range for birds, this could be your backyard, this could be your coop, but it's basically the area that the hens prefer to use, and hens don't tend to defend their home range. That's left to the roosters. And in the wild, a home range could be overlapping with the home range of other hens in other flocks. So, you know, ranges are kind of defined by the males and defended by the males, but hens can kind of cross some of those boundaries. And they do. You know, certain hens will go looking for roosters that they think might sound stronger or healthier, just based upon his crow. As far as the egg-laying industry, when you select for more egg-laying, you select for increased aggressiveness. When you select for rapid growth rate, like in the broiler industry, you select for a decrease in aggressiveness. And so researchers have found this out over time, and it does explain a lot. Andy, you've raised broiler chickens. They're
yes.
not the most hyperactive birds out there. They're kind of
especially
like...
Especially later on in the weeks.
Yeah. They're sitting there going, whatever. And they could be right next to another bird, and they can deal with it just fine. So good middle-of-the-road are those dual-purpose birds like we have in the American class of the American Poultry Association, birds like Rhode Island Reds, Plymouth Rocks, New Hampshire's, those breeds, tend to be a little bit more mellow because they've been bred for both meat and eggs. So let's talk a little bit about some of the behaviors I'm going to go over today with you, Andy. And I'm going to give you a brief overview and then go into a little bit more detail for each one. Feeding and drinking, that's really kind of self-explanatory. But those are individual behaviors. Then there's sexual behaviors. There's egg-laying and maternal behaviors. There's resting behaviors, comfort behaviors, exploration behaviors, social behavior, and imprinting. So considering that feeding and drinking are kind of self-explanatory, I'm going to go over that just briefly. For a young bird, they do have to learn which foods are palatable and which foods are most nutritious. And they learn that from the mother hen. So she does play a role. But the chicks do smell feed. And when you get your chicks from the hatchery or you hatch them out yourself and you put them in the brooder, they're going to learn pretty quickly just through smell what the food is and definitely what the water is by scent. Now, these are not the bloodhounds of the chicken world, okay? So, you know, they are, chickens don't have hands. They can't explore the world like you or I, Andy, or even like a dog or a cat. They explore the world by pecking with their beak. And so chickens will explore and peck at small objects, not so much to determine if they're food, but sometimes it's just, what is that? I need to find out what that is. There are peak feeding periods. For older birds, you're going to find, and I'm talking about not chicks, early morning and late evening. In the early morning, they're breaking their fast or having breakfast, the fast being when they were asleep overnight. And late in the evening, they really kind of fill up so that they can have the energy stored in their crop for them to make it all the way through the night without getting chilled and, you know, keep their internal combustion engine fired up all evening long. There are food searching behaviors. 60% of the day for a chicken is spent foraging, whether it's in litter or if you let your birds out, it's in the grass in your backyard. And they will spend 60% of their day performing foraging behavior, even if food is readily available. They're fulfilling their behavioral needs. So an example of this in the commercial industry. Caged hens will spend a significant amount of their time manipulating the food in the feed trough without actually eating it because they're trying to spend their day searching. So they're just going to pick up and drop food inside the feed tray. And, you know, when you do that enough times, feed eventually doesn't make its way back into the tray, and so it gets wasted. It drops down on the floor, or it goes into the manure pit below. So you get some feed wastage. That's why when your extension agent says, raise your feeders up so your chickens can't waste the feed, if you have a coop where your chickens stay in, they're going to still perform the foraging behaviors, and sometimes that leads to feed wastage. And, you know, the price to feed these days just does not lend itself to being wasted. So I tell folks all the time, raise your feeders up so that they're at the height of the middle of the bird's back. Now, of course, if you have a mixed flock of bantam chickens, your feed bill is likely to be higher because your feeder is going to be down a little bit lower, and so your bigger birds are more likely to waste the feed. Not saying they're going to, but they're more likely. Your design of the feeders over the years has been such that it's meant to prevent feed wastage, especially in commercial industry. Sometimes chickens will just sit there and pull feed out of the feeder and just watch it drop on the floor. And once it's on the floor, they don't want it. They aren't going to touch it. And that's really annoying, especially when you're paying the feed bill and they're not producing. So you want to have your feed containers designed so that either it's up high enough that they can't waste their feed by performing the foraging behavior, or the design can be just have a little lip on there so they can't just scoop feed out. Another behavior which is associated with male birds are sexual behaviors. And some of you have roosters and some of you listeners don't have roosters, but something everyone can recognize is a territorial call, which is when a rooster crows. Hey, Andy, you're the chicken whisperer, right?
Go ahead, what's that?
You're the chicken whisperer, right?
If you say so.
Go ahead and give us a traditional chicken whisperer rooster call.
Oh, my gosh. I knew you were going to ask me that. Okay, hang on. I got my hands full, Jen, with the reset the router because everything kind of went down on me. So I've got a seven-month-old in one arm and a two-year-old in the other. So let me see if we can go ahead and truly a traditional good old rooster crow. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, we should do Caleb. He can do it good. Hey, Caleb, what's a rooster say? What does a rooster say? Okay, there you go. That's a two-year-old for you.
Well, if you take a regular rooster's call, a vocalization, which is, as we spell it out, cock-a-doodle-doo, the female listens to the second and fourth syllable most carefully.
Seriously?
Because the longer and louder he is an indication of his health, just based upon his sound. So not only is cock-a-doodle-doo a sexual behavior, but it's also a territorial call. When birds wake up in the morning, they sing. And it's not only just because they're happy to sing because it's morning, but it's some of it's socialization. But for a lot of the male birds in many species, it's more of a, hey, I'm still alive, and this is still my territory. Don't try anything. So you have to think of it that way. And why do roosters crow at night? I don't know. They're dorks. Sometimes little things wake them up, and they're like, oh, I have to crow. Yeah, well, you know, there are no guarantees that roosters will crow only in the morning. So think about crowing a little bit differently, because the female chicken does. She doesn't get a choice when you choose the male for the pen. But if you have free-ranging chickens and there's a rooster nearby, he may be calling to call some of the girls over, and if they like what they hear, they will go see what's to see and see if he's worth breeding with rather than the rooster that you provided. Another behavior that roosters do is called waltzing, and it's a little dance that roosters do. They'll throw down one or maybe two wings and do a half-circle dance around a female bird. Or you, sometimes, if you're the object of the amorous rooster's attentions. And they're going to kind of kick at their wing a little bit as they're doing this half-circle dance. And as such, the rooster is, what he's doing is waltzing. And, man, if you're a female chicken, that is just the hottest thing. He's going to do his dance for you, and you're going to be like, yay, he's quite the dancer. Or if he's not to your liking, you're going to go, nope, bye. And
you know, I'm having this vision of, you know, Midtown Atlanta, Saturday night, there's the bar, somebody puts in the Bee Gees, on the DJ starts playing the Bee Gees, and here's this guy out
there
who
thinks
he's
hot stuff. Have you been in one of these bars, Andy?
Oh, my God.
It's a personal experience.
Picturing the rooster out on the dance floor and all the hens up at the bar drinking their white wine and don't like what they see, and they just turn their little heads back around and
yep. You know, birds have a lot of options, and you know, if that's not what they're looking for in a male, they're going to move on. So
now wait a minute, if you've got 8 hens and 1 rooster, we all know that some of those hens don't seem to have much of a choice.
No. But if they weren't in the coop, they may have relocated to a different farm of their own choice. So another behavior that males do is called tidbitting. Tidbitting is when they pick up and drop repeatedly a food or even a non-food item to draw hens closer. It could be a rock, it could be a stick.
So it's not that they're tasting it or trying to, it's not that they're trying to figure out what it is or tasting it if they like it.
And they're often vocalizing at the same time. So they're talking to the hens while they're picking up and dropping this thing. They're kind of going, boop, 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 boop. And
then they all come running.
The hens come over and go, oh, what's that? And then he just jumps on them and breeds them, you know. And so it's a way of drawing the female in. He may tidbit and then waltz. He may tidbit and he may breed. He may just tidbit and walk away. It might not have been the female he was hoping to attract.
So now, in a lot of cases, that's like, hey, come here, look at this. This may taste good. This may be some food for you. This may be nutritious. And
exactly.
Come take a look at this. So now, Doc, I'm envisioning all these males inviting their female out to dinner. See there? See, it's starting to play and make sense, you know? Hey, how about we have dinner, sometime? A dinner day. We'll have dinner sometime. And here, try this wonderful lasagna. I love this restaurant. And so now he's got the lasagna he's dangling in front of her. And then after that, he's going to get up and dance on the dance floor to try to impress her a little bit.
There you go.
It's all making sense now.
And birds around the world have their own tactics and strategies, and, you know, they have some really beautiful birds on this planet. Like the birds of paradise, they have special dances and plumages and calls, and, you know, the females can be picky. So sometimes the techniques have to be really, really intricate, like, say, bower birds and what shiny objects of certain colors that they collect to prove to a female that he is worthy of breeding rights. Now, for female sexual behaviors, this is the phone call that I get a lot of times from people. When you walk into your coop, some hens, not all of them, when you walk up next to them, sometimes they will crouch down or squat down, stomp their feet a little bit, not always, but sometimes, and kind of hold their wings out a little bit with their head straight forward. Now, what they're doing is they're assuming the breeding position, and they see you as dominant or as the preferred mate. And so they're assuming the position, and, you know, it's not like you're going to breed them, but it certainly does help for catching them and picking them up and doing whatever you're going to do with them, you know, whether it is pet them or maybe you're going to give them a dust bath or whatever you're going to do. But that's normal behavior, and it's called crouching. And certain hens do crouching behaviors for the males more often than others. And those females are considered to be a little more promiscuous. Yeah. I chose a different word, but yes.
So, yeah, okay, I've had a few tramp chickens in my flock on occasion.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's up to the male as to whether or not he wants to breed those specific females. And, you know, some males don't care. They'll just breed anything in the pen, whether or not she crouches or not. But,
yes, there's some of us out there.
So those are some of the behaviors that you may see in the coop. And if you've never noticed tidbitting before, I'd go out there and take a look at the roosters and see if they're doing that behavior. And now you know the name for the little dance he does, which is waltzing.
So is it safe to assume that because some people, let's say they've got one rooster, 12 hens, and they've got two, maybe three, that they're having to put maybe a hen saddle, hen apron on because of just the destruction from the rooster pulling out the feathers,
or scratch the
damage
feathers,
from the
yeah.
spurs, right? So is it safe to assume, since this is related to social behavior, that rooster may have his favorites in the group?
It could be, or that could be that they are soliciting from him breeding opportunities with greater frequency. It just depends on what your birds are doing, and you have to go out there and watch and see. Is he calling them over, or are they just seeking him out?
Okay.
Okay, now let's talk about egg-laying behaviors. Hens that are ready to start nesting and brooding or incubating their eggs and brooding chicks, they're going to go search for a nice, quiet site away from the rest of the harem where they can make a nest and lay eggs. Now, the nest shape itself and the degree of its enclosure, whether it's kind of a half circle or a bowl, that's dependent upon her hen and her genetic strain and, you know, how interested she is in devoting time to that. Hens will prefer loose material, but as we all know, some hens will go ahead and use the nest box with astroturf or even some very plain, flat, uncomfortable surfaces to go ahead and start laying their eggs and go broody. You're going to find that almost any chicken breed can go broody. A lot of the light hybrid hens, that's kind of been bred out of them, but medium and heavy hens, not a problem, still present. Turkeys, still present. And mother hen, towards the end of incubation, she actually vocalizes to the chicks inside the egg. So right about the last day of incubation, maybe the last 2 days of incubation, she's going to start talking to her chicks when she starts to hear them. And what she's doing is talking to them to help them synchronize their hatch.
Hmm.
And she's telling the slow ones to hurry up and the fast ones to slow down. And that does help a little bit. And they do hear each other inside the shells, tapping and kind of chirping a little bit, because on day 18 they break into the air cell at the large end of the egg and they start pulmonary respiration, and so that's when they can start cheeping inside the eggshell. And
kinda
of
like
course,
I talked with Lily. You know, she's 7 months old before she was
yeah.
born. I would often talk to her while she was in mommy, and most of our conversations had no dating till you're 30, miniskirts,
yeah.
no halter tops, setting the law down. So
I don't think miniskirts are amongst the issues, but when we learn to speak chicken, we'll find out.
Yeah, we will.
And then, of course, imprinting occurs after the chicks hatch when they recognize what mother is and what mother sounds like, looks like, smells like, and hey, when mother moves around, I better follow her because she's telling me she wants me to follow her when she clucks.
I got a great question in the chat room for you, Doc.
Hit
How will the absence of a mama hen affect chicks that are incubated artificially, if you will?
Usually they imprint on each other.
Okay.
And so they know what another chick looks like, and they just kind of follow each other around.
Has there been any research?
Or if you're the first thing they see, they imprint on you.
Has there been any research to show that you talked about she's getting the slow ones to hurry up, fast ones to slow down, try to synchronize that hatch? Has there been any studies that show hatching in the wild or hatching from a mama hen that the hatching period, like if they have 12 eggs underneath them and I've got 12 eggs in the baiter, that there may be a wider spread of hatch in the baiter than, say, under mama hen as far as time from the first one to the last one hatching out?
I'm sure that work has been done, but it probably was done, you know, in the 30s and the 40s at the dawn of poultry science. Moving on to resting behavior. Let's just go with the obvious. Chickens are active during the day and sleep at night, except for that one or two roosters that like to sound off at odd hours. You can change the resting behavior pattern, like when they go to sleep and when they wake up, by altering when you turn your lights on or off. And so if you're trying to get your chickens to lay eggs into the winter, you can put their lights on a timer. And as such, you know, by putting the lights on a timer, you know, they're going to wake up when the lights turn on and kind of go to bed when the lights turn off. Now that we're on shorter days, we're getting closer to the winter solstice, and we're on fairly short days where you can have that kind of influence. Now, perches or roosts. We know that when birds are resting at night, they will gather in groups to share perches or roosts, and they'll get really close together. Even if they don't particularly care for one another, they're going to get a little closer than you would see during the rest of the day. And that's just because that's a communal use behavior and sight. Now, that does allow them to share heat in the wintertime. They will spread themselves out a little bit more in the summertime so they can shed heat when it's hot at night. But in the wintertime, and some of your listeners need to know this, if one bird has external parasites, since they crowd close enough together that they touch, external parasites can go bird to bird to bird, just using that behavior to their advantage. So, yes, here I have inserted biosecurity once again into a conversation. Not related, but it really does tie into just about everything. And chickens do take rests during the day. You'll see them perhaps hanging out underneath a bush or resting after doing a dust bath. So they do take little rests during the day.
They stretch that one wing out and then pull that, push that little leg out. And they get
now, that's a different behavior. That's not resting. That's what I'm going to get to next.
Okay. Anxious to hear that now.
Let's get into comfort behaviors. Most comfort behaviors, they serve to keep feathers and skin in good condition. It also serves to maintain body tone. So to keep feathers and skin in good condition, you're going to see birds preen themselves. So that's a comfort behavior. So they're going to reach back to that oil gland, that uropygial gland at the base of their tail, and take a little bit of oil in their beak and run that oil through feathers just to maintain shine and condition and keep their feathers looking good. Because if you don't look good, nobody's going to want to breed with you. So for roosters, this is an important part of their routine. If you don't have the right amount of luster in certain parts of your body, hens are not going to want to have anything to do with you. Dust bathing helps remove external parasites, and that's when, you know, they try to get dirt or sand down to their skin, and sometimes they can look like they're digging dust bowls down to China. It'll be 3 feet deep. other things that they do to maintain body tone is wing flapping, body shaking, feather ruffling, wing stretching, which is what you described, and leg stretching. So that's all to help maintain body tone. So those are some comfort behaviors that are easily identified. What's got you chuckling?
You're describing all these things, all these great exercises and body movements, and I'm just thinking of driving through a little strip mall and seeing chicken yoga classes at 2, 4, 6, and 8. You walk
well, who
in
knows?
And all these chickens are stretched out and preening. And
well, if the radio thing doesn't work out for you, now you know what business
you
can go into next.
Absolutely.
Okay. Communication. That's part of social behavior. To communicate with each other, chickens use both sound and posture. So, you know, sometimes you'll see young birds when they're running around, sometimes they'll run around, they'll go face-to-face with another chicken and just stand up real tall and stare at each other. And then somebody backs down and somebody's won. And so, you know, they've got postures that they do take with one another. There are over 30 different types of vocalizations for chickens. Most of them are warnings. But there are also social bonds that are developed by having contact calls and also distress calls. A lot of people are always tickled when they hear the egg-laying calls, the call that says, hey, I just laid an egg. And sometimes there's social status calls that says, you know, hey, don't peck on me. I'm more dominant than you. And then that's followed with or starts with perhaps posturing. Roosters have a division of roles that is different from a female. Roosters are vigilant for predators, but they also have to maintain a territory. And, you know, there is group cohesion. If you all of a sudden show up with a new chicken, put it in your group, somebody's going to get picked on, and it's that new bird. So non-group members usually are not tolerated and ends up being a fight. And they often cooperate to drive out newcomers. So if you're a hen trying to get into a new harem, you're going to be beat up at first. It's not easy. Now, here's a bit of information that always seems to surprise people. Recognition. Chickens do see in color. They look mostly at facial features for recognizing each other. The size and the color of the comb and specific features around the head and the neck are more important than features on the rest of the body for recognition. Chickens can remember just about over 100 other chickens. So they can recognize and remember 100 other individuals. Just over 100. When you dub male birds or even female birds, which means removing the comb, that causes more aggression. If you take a hen with a floppy comb with, like, say, a leghorn, and you fix it so that it flops the other direction, they don't recognize her anymore. Yeah. In 1923, one of the first persons to do behavior work was a gentleman by the name of T. Sheldrup Eby, and he found that when you turn the comb and fasten it to the other side of the head, their flock members are like, who are you?
Excuse me, ma'am, I don't recognize you today.
Yeah.
And you get slapped.
What are you talking about?
Well,
yeah.
You have pigtails instead of a ponytail.
Yeah, that's all it takes. But it's not just the comb. Another researcher looked at whether certain color feathers around the head changed colors. So it really is not just the head, but it's the head and neck that they look at the most. But when it really comes down to it, they're not limited to just the head and neck. They do look at other features, but it's mostly the head and the neck that they use for recognition.
Do you think that study with the chicken can recognize right at 100 or just over 100 other chickens, do you think that memory can last a length of time? For example, you have to separate a sick or injured hen for, let's say, 3 weeks, and then you bring them back, they would be able to understand or be able to recognize, oh, that's Louise that was here before. And if they recognize them, the ultimate question is, how come now they have to start, they pick on her, and now, you know, before she wasn't picked on per se, and then now you remove her for 3 weeks to treat her for whatever reason, you put her back in there. And it's in some cases, it's almost like adding a new bird to the flock,
right?
Because they're, who are you? But
well, if you think about
it,
when she was removed, you changed the social dynamic.
Right.
With her removal, somebody
moved up the chain.
Had to reassort themselves, yep. And so your bird that goes back in has to find a new place in the peck order. And so, yeah, they're going to go through some pecking. And if you put a bird back in too soon, they could get re-injured. So you need to keep a bird separate until they're capable of fending them, you know, fending for themselves when they have to reassort inside the flock. As I've said before, as far as recognition, hens do recognize which males are dominant, and they prefer to mate with them. And if all the males are dubbed, the females will prefer to mate with the males that have the largest remaining comb on their heads.
Okay.
So, think about how your chickens are choosing their mates if you have a rooster. As far as vocalizations, I said that there's quite a few warning calls. The call for an aerial predator versus a ground predator is significantly different.
Okay.
An aerial predator is like a long, loud whistle. And a ground predator is a lot of clucking and, you know, they're low to the ground trying to get away, versus an aerial predator, they're looking upwards. And hawks, owls, buzzards, sometimes crows or ravens will initiate that call. And I think we're going to go into peck order after your commercial. Are you interested in doing a commercial, Andy?
Yes, please do. That sounds really good. And folks, if you are tuning in now a little bit late, that is okay, because all shows are archived for your listening pleasure. We're talking with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD. We're talking all about social behavior in birds. And if I can get this to work, again, we're having some really slow issues here. So I'm going to try to go to commercial break. If it's just not cooperating, then it's still trying to put you on mute, Dr. McCray. But I'm going to go ahead and try and see what happens here and update the page. If it doesn't cooperate, we'll come right back and catch up on the commercials a little bit later. So stand by, folks.
Okay.
Very slow. My wheels are just sitting here and spinning and spinning and spinning. So obviously a lack of bandwidth. I don't know if it's because of the weather, because of the hour of the day, or because everybody's online at the same time here or whatnot. But it's just not going to pan out. So we will continue.
Well, everybody should be online listening to your show, right?
There you go. Good save.
So are you having rainy weather right now?
We are, and it is just a steady, cold, light rain, just to make things cool, moist, wet, miserable.
Very fall-like, then.
Yes, very much so. Absolutely. So, yep, no. I'm trying this one more time, just one more time. It seems to, but if not, we will continue. It seems to maybe have updated here. So, let's try this. Let's try this again. Yeah, forget it.
It's hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer.
Oh, there it goes.
Yeah, there's just too much of a delay to even run them back-to-back, so guess what? Won't worry about it. We'll continue on with Social Behavior and Birds with Dr. McRae.
Okay. And like I said before, if there's any more questions that pop up, let me know.
Will do.
Okay, so talking about peck order, or a lot of people say pecking order. Technically, it's peck order. It's a social hierarchy. It forms when the birds are about 4 weeks old, and males have a separate hierarchy from females. Why? Well, it decreases aggression. If you don't have to worry about everybody in your harem, then that's just a little bit less stress for you. It also, having a peck order, allows for certain birds to have a priority access to food, to water, to mates, to nest sites. And you know, with that predetermination, that lowers stress. If you know who's ahead of you or above you in the dominance, then you know you can't get into that nest box till they come out. But if you are at the same level or slightly above so-and-so who's in the nest box, you may just walk right in and try to lay an egg right on top of them or kick them out. So, you know, there's two forms of hierarchy, linear and complex. I'm going to try to describe these, although this really isn't my area of expertise. But linear is basically when the dominant bird pecks all birds below her in rank. And the second ranking bird pecks everybody who's below her. And the third ranking bird pecks everybody who's below her. So that's really kind of obvious in small flocks. Who gets pecked and who does the pecking helps you determine who's really on top. Who pecks whom? Now, in a complex system like a large flock, several hundred birds, it really is more of a, determined on an interaction basis. Some birds who are low-ranking will peck at high-ranking and vice versa. And then some birds never end up interacting just because they're physically not near each other. So on and so forth, and so that's more of a complex system. But when people say, yeah, you can have four chickens, sometimes I wonder if that doesn't create more stress, because with fewer birds, there's going to be more interactions, and I don't know. Are the birds happier having a smaller flock, or do you need at least six birds? I don't have the answer to that question. But, you know, if you even have two house chickens, somebody's going to be in charge. Someone's going to be a little bit more dominant than the other. Now, how the birds space themselves out in the coop and how they move around in the coop, that depends upon several factors. How old the birds are. What strain of chickens you have. Some strains of chickens are far more active than others. Movement depends upon where the resources are. There's going to be a lot more movement around the feeders and the waters. So where you choose to locate those things in your coop, you know, can lead to caked up dirty litter, or you certainly don't want to locate, like, say, the water underneath the roosts, that sort of thing, because that's just going to be a mess. The size of your flock will influence how much space gets used and where the birds move about. There are aggressive relationships that involve movement patterns. And then there's also affiliative relationships. So that means that birds do have sometimes alliances. And with the amount of research that's taking place in non-human species, they're finding out that, like, even in primates, there are groups within certain chimpanzee family groups, there are certain individuals that have alliances with others. And so they'll share resources or share foods preferentially with those particular individuals. And so an affiliative relationship for a chicken, you know, isn't as complex as, say, a primate, but they do exist. So where do the birds usually get close to one another and tolerate one another? Well, we talked about roosting.
Yep.
Feeding. If you do, instead of having food available at all times, if you feed once or twice a day, they all come running for the food, and they'll tolerate each other to eat. Dust bathing bowls or favored dust bathing spots. Sometimes you'll see two or three birds in one particular spot, and they'll put up with each other and touching each other and coming in contact with each other just for the purpose of dust bathing. And then, of course, we've talked about certain behaviors that attract other birds, like, say, tidbitting, that facilitate certain social behaviors. We give our birds nest boxes. It's usually one bird per nest box. Doesn't always work that way, but that's the goal. But you can have communal nest boxes. Hens do tolerate each other if you have a communal nest box, something that's maybe 3 feet long by a foot wide or 18 inches wide and 18 inches high. And, you know, again, that works. Large flocks, we don't know quite as much about the behavior. So that's why I'm sharing more of the information for the small flocks.
Okay.
If you have listeners who sell their eggs, you know that it's easier and preferred that the hens lay their eggs in the nest boxes because you can keep the nest boxes clean. In some commercial systems for a while, they were getting a huge number of birds that were laying eggs on the floor. Well, depending on whether or not your nest box faces a window that has bright light or if your nest box has a perch in front of it, that can influence whether or not the chicken chooses to use the nest box or if they lay the eggs on the floor. It also can be an issue if you don't have enough nest boxes. You need one nest box for every four hens. So hens tend to like to have their nest boxes facing kind of a dark part of the house, with not a whole lot of light or a lot of movement. So a nest box that faces an aisleway is not going to be preferred versus a nest box that faces away from an aisleway. The darker nest boxes tend to get used a lot more because, again, chickens are birds of the bamboo forest, and they like to pretend like they're hiding out and laying an egg in a nice hidey spot. And so I've told people several times, if you want more of your nest boxes to get used, put little curtains over the front of them. They don't have to be fancy. It could be part of a feed bag even, with a split up the middle so that they can get in and out easily. And it just darkens it enough that perhaps some of the birds that were, you know, waiting to use the communal nest box, go check out that other nest box and go, oh, okay, I can handle this. This is dark enough, and lay their eggs there. Perches. Not all nest boxes have perches in front of them. And okay. If you never trained your chickens how to perch when they were younger, sometimes that perch that's between where they're standing and where the nest box is too hard to figure out, and it confuses them, and they don't know how to perch or what that thing is for, and so they can't get into the nest box And so they'll just lay their egg on the floor.
Okay.
So, you know, when we started to build nest boxes that were of different design, that had perches outside the front, in the commercial industry, several birds that didn't know how to perch, they just laid all their eggs on the floor. And that's kind of a pain because you can't really sell those eggs. Cannibalism. We've talked about this from time to time, Andy.
Yes.
That usually starts with a feather-pecking behavior. Feather-pecking is either an assertion of dominance related to peck order, or it could be if the birds are quote-unquote, cooped up, perhaps during a rainstorm, hurricane, snow event, and you have not given them adequate space, then they will attempt to fulfill foraging behavior by pecking at the feathers of a fellow bird. Now, that's probably the least dominant bird that's getting pecked on, and they're not going to like having their feathers plucked out. So once the birds see blood, if they pull the right feather and they see blood, cannibalism may quickly follow. Or if the birds are laying eggs on the floor instead of in a nest box and somebody comes along and pecks at the vent or the oviduct or the hen that's trying to lay the egg, and you know where they kind of go into a trance at that state, at that point, somebody can get really nasty and, you know, cause bleeding, which can lead to cannibalism. And, you know, prolapse in the chicken is not good. It's not something pleasant for any owner to deal with. I think I'm going to end with completion behaviors, Andy.
Okay.
Now, certain behaviors must be completed. Interruptions are not possible. Even if you physically put your hand in the way, they're going to complete that behavior. An example of this is like, say, when a goose is on the nest and she's sitting on the nest. If you reach under her, good luck with not getting bitten. If you reach underneath her and take out one of her eggs and put it just out of her reach, she will stand up, take a step or two forward, reach out with her beak, and scoop that egg towards her underside, towards the nest. Now, that behavior must be completed, that scooping action. You can actually physically put your hand in the way, and she will push your hand aside to perform that scooping action. At certain points when a chicken is laying its egg, when it kind of gets into that trance, when the egg is moving out of the shell gland and into the vagina and out through the cloaca, you know, she's barring, you know, anything unforeseen, she's going to go ahead and lay that egg when it starts to... when you start to see it leave the oviduct. Now, a little bit earlier in that process, if a fox were to try to come along, she might hang on to that egg for an extra day or so until she felt it was safe to go back there and go ahead and lay her egg. But at certain points in that, she can't stop. So certain behaviors must be completed. And like that egg-pulling behavior for the goose is a really good example of that. So there you have it, Andy. We've talked about several different behaviors, including peck order, some of which I'm sure people were well aware of, like, say, dust bathing and preening, but maybe not everybody realized that was a comfort behavior. So when your wife, Andy, is primping in front of the mirror, just leave her be. It's a comfort behavior.
Okay, I can see that happening because I've been on occasion known to rush her a little bit as she pulls out her, I don't even know what it's called. It's just, I don't know. It's not a curling iron. I guess it's a help.
Straightening iron.
It looks like a curling helmet. Wait for it to heat up. Anyway, so yes, I have been known to do that. So
maybe she's trying to make herself look like a frizzle.
Let her preen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, very good. I will keep that in mind next time we're going out somewhere. So,
maybe that's when you use a crimping iron. Sorry. Wrong piece of equipment.
To be a frizzle?
Yeah, to be a frizzle.
Hey, this is awesome, awesome, awesome information. I'm sure it'll be one of our hot shows, as always. And lots of folks in the chat room really appreciate you coming on. And, real quick question before you go, if you got time to answer it, Christmas chick.
Mm-hmm.
Why do chickens gape or look like they are yawning? That's the question.
Probably because they are.
Okay.
If they're gaping repeatedly, it's probably a respiratory issue. But sometimes it's to help move food down into the crop. Other times it is just a big breath.
Okay. Satisfies my curiosity. So.
I just hope it's not gape worms that she's got a problem with.
No, I hope not either. So, thank you very much for coming on. As always, tremendous information, awesome, and it's delivered for our little minds to absorb and understand with our backyard chickens. So thank you so much for that, and we look forward to having you back on here in a couple of weeks. So thank you very much for coming on today, Doc.
Thank you, Andy.
All right.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
All right, folks, thank you very much for staying with us today, and what a great show with poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae. We love it when she's on twice a month. If you like what you heard today with the doc, you can come on, and she is on the first and third Thursday of every month with wonderful, wonderful topics. And she's been with us for a while, and we love her coming on. So thank you, Dr. McCrae. Hey, this will wrap it up for this week, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. But I do have a special announcement if you missed it on our Facebook page. This coming Monday, we're going to have a special episode, mainly because it's a different time. I've been wanting to do this for a while, but we're going to try to do an occasional evening show, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So this coming Monday, there will be no show at noon. We will, however, have a show that evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown, founder of First State Vet Supply. And more than likely, it's going to be, again, open mic, if you will. We'll be taking questions from listeners. You can call in. You can post your question in the chat room. You can post it on Facebook, maybe on Twitter. And so it's going to be an all-new show coming up, or show time, if you will, this coming Monday. So please make a note of that. I'll be sharing more of that on our Facebook and Twitter pages over the weekend. And let's see what else we have next week, kind of wrapping up the month here as it slowly gets here. Of course, Monday, the evening show on the 21st. Tuesday, I don't know if we have anything on Tuesday. Wednesday, we've got another episode of All About Quail with the Quail Lady. And then Thursday, the 24th, we've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, that's going to be coming on. And then, let's see, we've got some scheduled guests the last week of the month as well. And I'll be hitting the road a little bit towards the end of the last week, so there may be some questionable shows that may or may not air. But, again, thank you very much for tuning in today. We appreciate it. And remember, all shows are archived for free for your listening pleasure on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and right here on Blog Talk. radio.com. So thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks to poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae, and we'll see you Monday. Remember, new time on Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.